from New York City, the world-famous Comedy Cellar presents Live from America Podcast. Live from America Podcast. With Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabber. Live from America Podcast. Where the top experts in the world and the best comics in the nation get together weekly to discuss today's issues as they cover news, culture, politics, comedy, and more with an equal part of knowledge and comedy. And now, here are your hosts, Hatem Gabber and Noam Dorman.
Okay, welcome to Live from America Podcast. This is Hatem, alongside me, Noam Dorman, the owner of the Comedy Cellar and one of our favorite and regular and an author plus comedian, Mr. Dan Natterman.
Thank you, Hatem, for having me on this
very special episode.
Yes.
So we decided to make a special edition episode today, just a bonus episode, for two reasons. One is obviously 9/11, and another subject that we're going to deal with, which was Twitter. But we're going to have a few guests jumping in and out. So let me admit one of the guests first here as we go. Today we're going to, we wanted to do this show because it's 20 years anniversary for 9/11. And there's so much happened at the Comedy Cellar at that day that I think a lot of people don't know. So we're going to try to cover a little bit of it. And the second reason is there was a tweet about events happening at Comedy Cellar during 9/11. Manny Dorman, the owner of the Comedy Cellar, so we'll kind of want to respond to that a little bit. You guys ready for this?
Hit it. I don't see Mustafa's face. I just see an M.
Yeah. So also a former manager of Dave Chappelle, producer of many comedy shows online. You can watch online all the time. Mustafa Abu Hajj is here. He's trying to log in. And as soon as he does, we will talk.
How did you say his last name?
I thought it was Abuliha. He said Abu Hajj, which sounds more like an Arabic name, but I thought it was Abuliha.
Yeah, that's what I said. Okay.
You said
so Noam, you want to go ahead and tell each other, log in. Mustafa has some difficulties. You want to tell us a little bit about what happened with the tweet and all that stuff for the listeners? And then after that, we're going to talk about our memories from 9/11.
Do you have the tweet? Do you have the tweet available there? If not, I can find the tweet.
Yeah.
Well, it was a tweet. He tweeted a screenshot of an article from Vulture, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Now, Vulture is the same low-rent outfit that published that ridiculous article by Guy Branum that also tried to say that the table at the Comedy Cellar was anti-gay and anti-trans. I mean, and he did our podcast and he got his hat handed to him because, of course, not only was it not the case, but he had never actually been to the Comedy Cellar and he wrote this whole article about it. That Simons retweeted Mark Maron. You gotta forgive me, I'm a little tooth pain here. He says, "It was out of that tension where you really saw comics sort of sizing up." This is in reference to 9/11. That's where the Tough Crowd, Colin Quinn's show, and back table at the Cellar really evolved into what it was and what it became because of 9/11. Which is, first of all, let's just take that. The table did not evolve after 9/11. Do you think it evolved after 9/11, Hatem? You're muted, Hatem. Mike's muted.
Yeah, absolutely 100% wrong. You know
why?
Because the Cellar, the table, it's just like it started when the Cellar started. You know, here you go, Mustafa's here.
Hey guys.
I don't remember 9/11 having anything pivotal about the table.
No, not at all. Not at all. The Cellar table started way before that, you know.
Well, no, it wasn't way before that because, you know, don't forget, it didn't start until after we moved the bar from the center of the room. So
It was right after September. Like it was before September 11, but not a lot before September 11. September 11 definitely made the Cellar table more active. You know, I think it was a topic of discussion. It was, you know, because Manny was, you know, he he always liked to discuss whatever was happening, you know, whatever was.
In my memory, I remember Manny hollering at Dino Badala, and I think it was before 9/11, about Israel.
Yeah.
And I think
the 9/11 obviously became the hottest topic at the table because it was the hottest topic in the world at the time for a good amount of time. But 9/11, but the table didn't come into being or sustain itself because of 9/11.
But I want to talk about the table in a little bit, but I want to address one thing that was in the tweet because
that's what he said.
Yeah.
He said there were definitely comics like he says there were definitely comics that were like, quote, let's kill all these fucking Muslims. Let's lock them all up, like, immediately. And then there were a few liberal comics who were like, quote, is that really the solution? And then Manny Dwarman, who was already sort of a political conservative Zionist guy, was still alive. So he was stoking the flames a bit.
So that really bothered me for many reasons. And I wanted to just bring somebody who's joined us from far away just to defend what's happening, as well as Mustafa, as myself as well, you know. And I think you should know, because these are three Arabic and Muslim people that were there during, you know, this thing. But Mustafa, go ahead first.
No, I mean, look,
Ahmed! Hey, Ahmed!
Hey, how are you?
Mustafa,
how are you?
So, Ahmed...
How are you?
Ahmed used to be the chef in the Ultra, and he worked with Manny before, I don't know if before Mustafa or no, but he knows Manny for a long time. And when I tell him the story, he was very furious like the rest of us, asked him to join.
Okay, so let Ahmed wait. So Mustafa was talking, but I want to hear what Ahmed said. Go ahead, Mustafa, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I think, you know, I read the article and I shared my thoughts with Noam. I think the article was written in a way to depict the fact that Manny was basically racist against Arabs and Muslims, and that was not true. You know, as far as Manny being provocative, yeah, I mean, this is the conversations we used to have, me and Manny, all the time, where basically, you know, this is how part of his personality was basically to challenge in the conversations anyone that, you know, our challenge basically was between Israel and Palestine. And he would go and get me books, and then he would say, read these books and let's talk about it. It was never coming from a place of hatred. It was not coming from a place of ungenuine. As a matter of fact, I always felt that Manny was genuine when we had conversations. This was the secret sauce of our friendship, is that we didn't feel that we agreed on most of the things, but we had these discussions. We had these debates all the time. I look at Manny as more of a scholar than just someone that just basically, you know, there to put flames on the fire. There are definitely many situations where Manny would provoke something, but it wasn't related to Arabs or Muslims. At least, if we're talking about September 11, it was an anger across the room, across the nation. You know, I remember around that time, me and Martaz, Mike, you know, Mike K.
Who is Egyptian?
We had fear of walking. Yeah, who we had fear walking in Washington Square Park and speaking Arabic. We would have to speak English because people were very angry. And, you know, and at that time, you know, we had a lot of discussions, me and Manny. We had a lot of debates, you know, with comedians. And the general senses, there was a general anger in there. Comedians, some of these comedians are to this day, they're racist. Doesn't matter whether they're talking about black people, whether they're talking about Arabs or Muslims. You know, some of these comedians were racist, and they had a tough, hard line on what was happening. And maybe some of the comedians thought about, let's kill all Arabs and Muslims. But, you know, this is also the same attitude that Arabs might have about kill or Americans when America goes into the Middle East and bombs, Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, you know. So I don't think that the article was in any way, shape or form descriptive to who Manny was. Manny was a stand up guy. He always listened to the other side. And I've known him for a long time, and we were very close. I've never seen him being racist or basically a hard line against Muslims or Arabs. He respected the workers that were working for him. There was at one time, everybody that worked in the kitchen was an Egyptian mostly, maybe some Moroccans here and there. But the majority of the workers that have worked for Manny through the years were and they would go downstairs and they would pray at the time of prayer. You know, Manny was never opposed to that. During Ramadan, when there was time for them to, you know, for their meal, there was, Manny as a business owner was always the rush hour. He would actually, you know, wouldn't have a problem with them sitting and eating at that time, even if it was busy time. So, you know, he was respectful to the culture, respectful to the religion, and you know, having a hard line in terms of his opinion on Palestine or Arabs or Muslims, it's something that we always argued about, we always debated, we always had screaming matches, but then at the end of the argument, it was always love. It was always the next day when we.
We're cut off.
Choking up. Mustafa, you cut off. So, all right. So let me, before we bring Ahmed, I just want to say a couple things to be fair. First of all, I tweeted with Mark. Mustafa, you cut off for a second. So I texted with Mark Maron, just to be clear, and Mark said, and he seemed to be sincere about it, that he didn't, I'm sorry we cut you off, Mustafa, but you cut off for like a long time. Mark Maron, I don't want to read his text out loud, but he said, and he seemed sincere, that he didn't mean to conflate the two. He meant that my father was stoking debate, and even though it's written in the same paragraph as the let's kill all these fucking Muslims, he didn't mean to, that one should be with the other. I mean,
but no, is the quote just word for word an accurate quote, or did Mark say that the quote was not accurate?
No, he didn't say the quote wasn't accurate. He just said that it's not the way he meant it, and I'm not sure it's an accurate quote, but I'm not sure it's a contiguous quote. I'm not sure it's not that the reporter might not have taken things. I don't know. So that's the first comment I want to make. And the second comment I want to make is that I think it's kind of interesting that if the Israeli guy wants to debate, he's provocative, you know, and whereas I think if it was like the Arabic guy wanted to talk about his cause, nobody would describe him as being like this, you know, hardline provocative guy. They just, and number three, I also want to say that, and I don't want to get into debate about politics. I just want to put it out there. You might think this, what I'm about to say is as it should be. I just want to make the observation that only an Israeli can be called into question for having the hardline position that his country ought to exist. In other words, Manny was a Zionist. What is a Zionist? Manny actually believed that his country, where he was born, Israel, should not get wiped off the map. There's no analogy to any other nationality in the world where somebody would consider that person to be, maybe he's suspect, maybe that Chinese guy, maybe that Taiwanese guy who thinks that Taiwan should still have his, you know, have its own, is morally suspect for that position. So these are just like little hidden assumptions in the way these things are written. And none of this has to do with the accusation which we're talking about, which is whether my father had feelings like that. So anyway, and finally, I don't ever recall any comedian expressing, you know, outright racist attitudes about Islam but maybe you do. I just want to say I don't remember that. So
the only thing I can recall with precision is Vic Henley expressing disgust at violence against Muslims in New York. That's the only
against Muslims.
Again, he was decrying violence against Muslims. Yeah.
So Seth Simon's
only.
I don't want to mention names, but there was a comedian that basically was joking about it. You know,
joking about it.
I think we all know his name. So I really am not interested in.
Yeah, I think I know.
Yeah, who joking about it, like joking, like on the table. It wasn't like. Yeah, which was basically like I even complained to Manny at that time about, you know, like this is not a good talk. I don't remember Manny being at that table. I remember me listening to that conversation. I it's been so long that I don't remember the exact details of what was going on. But yes, there was one comedian that definitely I recall.
So we probably,
saying, you know, what do we need? Yeah,
we probably all know who that is. And he's still making those jokes today.
Yeah.
But having said that, there was an accusation that Jim Norton was saying stuff like this. And I want to defend Jim very adamantly. Apparently, they unearthed some Opie and Anthony thing where he said, I don't want to buy coffee from these savages. I want to buy coffee from Starbucks and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, that's just a bitch, you know, because Norton was always pretty much on the isolationist aspect of politics. And I've never heard Norton say a hateful thing about any group. I don't know about ONA, you know, it's to be fair, there is stuff on ONA said that I don't like at all. And he is, you know, been around those people, but the accusation that Norton, and he doesn't like it. I know he doesn't like when they say this, but the accusation that Norton at the table was saying anything like that, that's just ridiculous. So, okay, Ahmed, what? How are you? What have you been doing?
How about you? How about everyone? Good? How about you, Dan? Good?
Yes, thumbs up.
I haven't seen you in like 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years, yeah. 10, maybe 12, yeah. 10, 12, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's you're right, Hatem. It was worth it just to see Ahmed. I haven't seen him all this time.
So Ahmed, tell us about your time at the Comedy Cellar. What you know about Manny? I know you're busy, and thank you for being here. Just you can.
You're welcome, my friend. I remember I started from 1996,
yeah,
until I think 2008 or something like that. So when I start, I was like in the kitchen, and I start like first of all, like I start from the bottom, like dishwasher, and you know, I when you make mistakes or something like that. So I remember manager, her name is Sylvia. She write like CMD. You have to see Manny to, he has to talk to you about what you leave, you know, something like that. So always when I have to go to see Manny, and this time I was new, and it was like, I just came from my country, Egypt. And I don't speak English in this time. And I have to see Manny to talk to me about what I leave there in the kitchen, something like that. He always very nice. I was like scared first time to go talk to the boss. And, you know, so he was, from this time, I love this man. So after that, I have to be like salad man. And after that, I work everywhere in the place. I work everywhere. I work in the kitchen. I work outside in now. With the customer outside, and I work in the comedy cellar, I work in the coffee bar, I work everywhere, in the kitchen, outside, everywhere. So I see Manny, his reaction when outside in the kitchen, he was very nice, and always he talked to me about how I save money and if sometimes he see me sitting in the table, the first table, I remember the table, I think 31. I was sitting like that in the daytime because I was bus boy and they have to tape me, the waitress has to tape me, yeah. So I was like sitting down when he come in from outside, say, Ahmed, what's going on? I said, you know, it's slow, you know, And you know, say, Ahmad, come on, don't worry about it. We're gonna be busy. When he said that after 1 hour, 2 hours, the place is full. We got busy, you know. He always take care of me, and I got very bad. I got very angry when I hear about this happens. He say like he's racist or something. No. He was very, very good man, and I love him so much. And
do you remember 9/11? Around 9/11?
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually in this time. I remember he say, "Don't worry, Ahmad. If anybody talk to you, like I say, no, it's okay." But he in this time he's like he take care of us more. He take care of us more. He always every week from this time. I remember he gave me $100 extra in my money. I remember that. He was, you know, I got very angry when I hear about whatever they say about him. Like, no, this is not happening. Never. You know what I mean? So.
Well, it's very nice of you to say, Ahmed. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So basically, you know, the first part we wanted to cover is like this ridiculous accusation. And I, you know.
But wait, I'm sorry. So my son, Manny, is going to cry. My son Manny's here. Is it Manny?
Manny.
Hi.
Little Manny.
Hey, Manny.
So he's here just by coincidence. He came down because he's fighting with his sister.
No. Oh,
good job.
Yeah. So he came down. He came down to squeal on his sister because she's on her iPad when she's not supposed to be. But.
And I'm mad because I don't want to break the rules.
All right.
Good for you.
But part of the reason. Part of the reason this is so visceral to me, I told Musabar yesterday, is because the internet is forever. I mean, forever and ever and ever. And he's going to grow up. His brother and sister are going to grow up. And at some point, they're going to inquire about their family and their history. And they're going to read these outrageous things that horrible people right, or these agendas, these are agenda-driven narratives where people rewrite history to fit what they want. And it's just very important to me that they know what's true and what's not true, warts and all. So
yeah, I just want to
hold on. So I'm really appreciative to you guys as friends, as Arabic people, for stepping up and setting the record straight, because it's forever and it matters. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to say thank you. Well, I wanted to say three things quickly. One is none of us work at the cellar or related to the cellar in any way. As a matter of fact, most of us don't even like Noam, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, like he said, we need to set the record straight because a lot of us. Yeah, because a lot of us, when we first moved here, maybe that was our first or second job. And when you meet, you know, somebody like Manny Dorman and the Comedy Cellar as a culture, and, you know, it's part of your life, regardless of in the future, you disagree or you have a different, or you even compete. Like me and Mustafa, we actually we have our own shows, you know. But that doesn't mean that we're not gonna set the record straight when it comes to it, because that what exactly Manny would have done to us, or Noam for that matter, and that's what good people should say. So, and the other thing, it's insulting also to every Muslim and every Arab that work here that they say that that kind of environment exists, because we will not have been working there or allow it to work there, you know. So this is just bullshit. And you know, when you are, you know, Chris Rock have this joke, is like everybody hate the Yankees because they're winners, you know, nobody hate the Clippers because, you know, they don't do shit, you know. So when you're like in the comments, you're always gonna, people gonna come after your character, after your decision, after everything. So we wanted to set the record right. And I really appreciate, you know, both Mustafa just literally landed and Ahmed, he took a break from work and did that. And he was very, you know, and there's so many people that wanted to log in from Egypt, but obviously they couldn't make it. But everybody that I spoke to wanted to step in and say something. So now we're going to turn to
imagine what Hassan would say, right?
Well, he did, but I think I contacted him. I think he logged into Twitter instead. But
he would have a lot to say. He would have.
Let me just say
something very quick. Look, when I first was looking for a job, you know, this is a very quick story. You know, I went in and I asked for the owner. I looked at the window. It said Menachem Dvorman. So I said, I want to talk to Menachem. The hostess didn't even know that Manny meant Menachem. So she was like, who's Menachem? I said, it's the owner. So she went and got him. And he came in, met me at the door, and he said, yes, how can I help you? Very nice gentleman. Like, you know, he didn't know what I was looking for. And I said, I'm looking for a job. So I had a very strong accent. And he said, where are you from? I said, I'm Palestinian. He said, we're from Palestine. I said, well, you know, I'm from Haifa. He said, well, no, that's Israel. I said, no, that's Palestine. He said, no, that's Israel. I said, no, that's Palestine. So then he said, you want a job? Or I said, yeah, I want a job as a Palestinian. So he said, okay, come on in. And we sat down on one of the booths for about close to like 5 hours, just debating in Hebrew, because I spoke Hebrew fluently. Manny spoke Hebrew. So we, you know, English was my second language. So I still was not strong. And basically, he hired me as a Palestinian that argued with him about being a Palestinian or Israeli. And, you know, I basically had an Israeli passport. He had a passport that stayed on it, Palestine. So basically it was, you know, it was right there was like the connection between me and Manny. And Manny was the first person to show up on my graduation. To this day, the only tape that I have of my graduation was actually Manny. So, you know, Manny he was a father figure for me. I came into the Comedy Cellar very early, late teens, early adulthood, and Manny was always great. We, as I said before, we did not agree on a lot of things, but that didn't stop us from being very close friends. And, you know, the friendship between me and Noam is, you know, from the friendship and the you know, of me and Manny, you know? And, you know, when I spoke to Noam about that article, you know, it made me upset seeing Noam, you know, like very emotional. And that, and I understand how that, and just feel, you know, people might want some piece of fame to write something that may have result in more readers just because they want to feel that they're bashing somebody, but they don't know that long-term effect that they can have on people, on their personal lives.
Yeah. You know? I really
hope that someone would actually step up and write something that is true about Manny rather than just basically find a way to just criticize him for something he didn't do, you know.
And I
criticize all I want, you know, about his opinion of you know, the Palestinians. But even that, when we spoke about Palestine, he always was acknowledging the pain and acknowledging the suffering. But at the same time, like Noam said, it was very important to him that the state of Israel exists and stays and doesn't disappear. So, you know, I really hope that someone would actually write a real story about who Manny was, because he was a great human being.
And even for those, all the listeners that don't know Manny, it's not even about that. It's just like about, you know, he is the Comedy Cellar. But the thing is, you know, the timing of this article to write it around 9/11, try to make him look just to sell a headline, you know, that he is this, and he's attacking not only Manny, but the Comedy Cellar, everybody that ever worked on it during that, especially during that time. And I like Marc Maron, but I think he should step up and say, because I know his situation with every single comedian that Manny hired.
Yeah, I think Marc Maron. Look, Marc Maron is a great guy, and I love him. And I
same here.
He's very talented, and I actually have had many conversations with him about the Cellar, and you know, and I do believe that he loves Manny, and he cares a lot about Manny, and I think that that the writer here had an agenda, and the writer.
But that's what I'm saying. He heard about it.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. He heard about it. I think Mark Maron is a great guy, and I also have, you know, remember from a long time ago. But I say people in general, just for the listener, everybody, I think we live in a time where people need to step up when there's something wrong and say, no, I was part of that history and I need to correct it.
Okay, let's just be fair to Mark, who I told you already told what he said, and also the articles that we're picking out one small thing in the article, but I don't want to pretend that this is a big headline about the Comedy Cellar. It's just, it's a detail which matters to us, but it's not like the Louis thing, which was really viral about the Comedy Cellar or other controversies we've had in the past. This is just a piece of history that, you know,
but it could be built on if it's, yes, and not respond.
People who want to latch on to it, they latch on to it. And then what happens is that a year from now, they'll be making some sort of case and they'll pull this detail from here,
false,
and this false detail from there, and Guy Branum's story about the way we treat gays, and they'll create and they'll put it all together, and people say, well, I mean, there's so much smoke, there's got to be a fire, right?
Yeah.
So it's important to set the record straight and let the record show. We set the record straight by talking about it openly. Maron called it stoking the flames when you say, well, let's have this out. Let's argue about this. Let's talk about it. But I think stoking the flames is a cynical way to put it. Stoking the flames implies that you're trying to create a fire.
Yeah.
The opposite. We're trying to get the truth out.
Yeah. So let's switch. I want to switch to, you know, actual, because there's a lot to talk about in 9/11, actually, when it happened in the Comedy Cellar. And that needs like five more episodes. But I just want to get the crew over here about, you know, back in the day. And I just want to remind, I read something that really, and I get emotional about stuff like that, that was very in Instagram. It says, like, there's so many people in September 10th went to sleep thinking that they're just going to work. And then the next day, they're not there. So just, I hope everybody, from my personal experience, and everybody, don't take anything for granted, and just enjoy your life, tell people you love them, do what's right. So anyway, 9/11, you know, Mustafa and I and a bunch of people, we used to go to Mustafa's roof every night after work. We smoke weed, no, we never inhaled, and we drink, you know, and we stay in the rooftop till the morning, the very early morning. And that was one of the days that we did that, actually. But let's start with Dan, because you haven't talked. You want to tell us a little bit about your memory for that day?
Well, the irony there is I had a flying lesson at Teterboro Airport that day. Normally, I wouldn't have been up that early, but I had a flying lesson. So I turned on the television.
Flying lesson? You're Muslim?
No, I learned how to.
Flying lesson?
I learned how to land the plane.
Oh, shit.
But,
I hope that's a joke.
But I woke up early because I had to check the weather to see, you know, because we didn't have a lesson if the weather was bad. So I turned on the TV and the weather was perfect.
Hold on. You have flying lessons around 9/11? Because everybody that I know that have flying lesson was deported.
Okay. Well.
Or arrested, or at least interviewed. Were you interviewed at all?
Well, no. No.
Okay. Keep going. Flying lessons.
She's not going to be interviewed. Come on, man.
I know.
In the United States, and so. Yeah, I turned on the TV and the smoke, the first tower that got hit was on fire, and I thought it was a small plane, only because even though the damage was so enormous, I was like, well, it's probably a small plane, but that looks like a lot of damage for a small plane. But I couldn't imagine that it wasn't a small plane, and then I turned on the Howard Stern show, and then Howard was talking about it, and then Russ Meneve called me up and said, "Are you looking at this shit?" or something like that. You know, I don't have a great 9/11 story. I guess that's about it.
Did you actually? No, it doesn't have to be a story.
I remember, by the way, that Russ Meneve was wondering whether there'd be. He was like, back then, he was like doing like five sets a night.
Yeah. And
like wondering, I wonder if they're going to have shows tonight. I'm like, I really don't think so, Russ.
Yeah.
Then he wanted to go to the gym.
I'll tell you something very interesting. We were all wondering if comedy were ever going to come back. And I remember the very, very first show that we made, it was first of all, the crowd, let me describe the crowd. It was a combination of people that were celebrating life. They were at the World Trade Center and made it out. and they wanted to, and other people that just wanted to be with people. Now, for the comedian, it wasn't really a comedy show. Every comedian went in, I still remember that, you know, talk about their fantasy. If they were in the plane, what would they have done? It was just people talking, you know? And then there was a Madison Square Garden fundraiser, which Seinfeld and Chris Rock and Colin Quinn and all these people was happening a few days after. And they were coming to practice at the Cellar. And that's what kind of picked up. But people needed comedy at that time, you know. But the atmosphere at the Cellar, everyone, I talked to a lot of people that, you know, try to be here, but some of them didn't. Every single person that I talk about that from the staff said the same story, that after they heard the thing, they went to the Comedy Cellar just to be there because that was their safe place. Including myself.
I think at that
time, I'm sorry, man. I really gotta go because my, you know, my son game, you know.
Yeah, do you want to share your thing before you go quick?
Look, all I could say is it was you know, to me it was a shock. You know, the Comedy Cellar was basically like a sanctuary where I felt like I need to be there. I didn't feel safe. I mean, I'm talking from you know, from a Muslim Arab perspective, I didn't feel safe. I remember me and Mike walking down Washington Square Park, seeing these Italian kids at that time had like baseball bats. And he was like, "Where the fuck are the Arabs? Where are the sand niggers?" Like all of that shit, you know. It was tough. It was tough. Like, you know, you couldn't have a dialogue. You couldn't have a conversation. I remember like the after effect of it, of like basically, seeing how people are angry, people are reactive. And it just like that side of like for me, that side of America, like I was not used to, you know. I mean, I came from, you know, from a place where I felt I was discriminated against. And, you know, at that point when this was happening, you know, I was questioning whether, you know, I'm going to have to stay here or not, you know. So, you know, from my perspective, it was a very tough time. I understood it. I even wanted to volunteer, and I was rejected as a volunteer. You know, I remember, giving them my number and going and putting my name. And they said, "Well, we can't just let you in right now. We will let you know." And meanwhile, Mittal was with me at that time. And Mittal actually got in to volunteer, and I wasn't even allowed to volunteer. It was like for me, like obviously it's not about me. It's not about, it's not about that. It's about the people who suffered and the people who died. It was a terrible thing. I remember feeling angry at these people who did it. I felt like they almost cheated us. Like as a Muslim, as an Arab, I felt like I want to kill these people as much as not as much as anybody that called himself patriotic at that time. You know, I really was, I was shocked. I didn't believe that a Muslim would do something like this. Obviously there were a lot of, conspiracy theories. And you start following a lot of these conspiracy theories because you just want to believe that, you know, that someone would actually be that evil, you know? And I hope that, you know, that people who are listening and people who don't know, you know, they need to understand that this was an atrocity. It was something that every Muslim that I know of was against it, was not happy for it. I remember the news showing people celebrating, you know, in some parts of the world. And I felt that was not fair because it, you know, to the viewer, it was as if like all the Muslims and all the Arabs were celebrating 9/11. And that was not true. That was not true because I had people call me from overseas, from back home. I know I was talking to my parents, and the general idea was like, this is very evil, this is not right. We just don't believe that that someone would actually do something like this, you know? So that's my perspective. That's my, you know, this is what I experienced. And I know that, you know, that people have experienced, you know, many different things during that time. But I'm just talking about my feelings and not necessarily factual things and what was going on. But I felt at that point that I wasn't safe either, you know?
Listen, I know this is just tangential, you know, but there is this feeling that, and I know Dan gets it too, like when the Orthodox Jews do something just fucking crazy, right? So even something as like semi-comical as putting the penises in their mouth to suck the blood out after a circumcision, or something as more serious as just flaunting the vaccine requirements, and you know, just the various ridiculous things that they do, or from time to time horrible violence, but that's less often with them, right? It's unbelievably awkward as a Jew to have to account for it, to be able to speak about it, and I know you guys go through a similar thing in various aspects of for lack of a better word, radical Orthodox Islamic culture around the world, which has its particular fever in the end of the 20th century and now, and some of that is very violent and anti-gay, and you know, it's a very difficult thing to be attached and affectionate and love a culture which also at the same time has a deep flaw in it that people expect you to, you know, I want you to say it out loud, you know. Yeah, I want to hear you say that the Muslims, blah blah, you know, are throw gays off rooftops. You know, I want to hear you say that the Orthodox Jews, blah 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 blah. This is psychologically just a difficult position for humans to be in, and that's what I mean. It's just as simple as that. And I think that you have to cut people a little slack who are in those positions, just by recognizing, like, it's not easy. You know, it's just not easy. You know,
it's also, you know, to Mustafa's point. You know, the media, when they covered, I remember the people celebrating around the world from the Arabic, which is, and they never covered the prayers that had millions of people in every Muslim country that were praying for the victims, you know, something like that. But obviously, yeah, those things sell versus.
Oh, and Trump talked about and it turned out to be a lie, the celebrating on rooftops, you know, the Arabic.
They were Israelis, by the way.
But I will say we did know some Arabic people. We all knew them who were, I wouldn't say they were pro 9/11, but they had a little bit of the you know, Americans chickens coming home to roost attitude about it that Reverend Wright had, you know. But that's people, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly the magic word, people. It's not everyone. It's not
Well, yeah, I mean, look, you know, I mean, look, there is the. I mean, this is for another topic, but there's definitely the sentiment in the Arab and Muslim world is that, you know, America comes in, you know, whether it's, you know, obviously, you know, this resulted in the Iraq war, but there's always this anti-American sentiment because, you know, America as a country, you know, and this is something, you know, this is something that is not really the best time for it, as, you know, for 9/11, but really as a country is a great country. It's the best country in the world. There is no other country in the world that is like it in terms of freedom, opportunity, anti-racism, no matter what. Still, like, if I was to compare, you know, America with another country where, you know, the racism is a lot less than in other places. But there's definitely this almost blame game where, you know, a lot of the Arab leadership is friends with America. They're supported by America, yet they're very bad for their own people. So what ends up happening, it's a chain reaction. When your leader is shitty to you and is constantly oppressing you, and then you see that America is supporting that leader, that it's kind of like a chain react to hating these people. I'm not saying this is how I think, but I also know, also as much as you know, Noam, that there were people that basically said, well, you know, you guys have been fucking with the Muslim world for so long. This is what is going, you know, this is what's going to be the results. Now,
and just to add to Mustafa's, just to add to Mustafa's word about this is a great cut. And I always talk about this over and over. If this happened, like, yes, there was some racism and there was action and there was killing for Muslims and discrimination against them during 9/11. However, the percentage of that, if you compare it, if that happened in another country, in Egypt, we played a soccer game against Algeria and it turned to, if you were Algerian or Egyptian, well, you'll be killed. If 9/11 happened in another country, the people from that attack or not from it, but, you know, related to it, they will be dead. You know, here, I remember the first day I went to the, right after 9/11, I went to check on a friend of mine and he lived by the mosque. I go there, cops around the mosque protecting it. You know, this is, you can say whatever you want. Yes, and I agree with Mustafa, there's a lot of things that happen, but still this is, I also agree with him when he said that this is the greatest country. And if 9/11 happened anywhere else, the people would have suffered 1,000 times more than we've suffered here. I think we suffered. I think we paid the price for people that we don't relate to. But we, as American people, we are willing to take that. We understand it and we did it. It's wrong. But, you know, we understand that we will take that racism from people that were angry. But I still give credit to a lot of people here that stepped up and protected.
You have to give credit to our dear friends, the Canadians, who probably would have had a similar reaction to us if that
Canada's not really a country. Okay. I was talking about real countries. But yeah, Mustafa, I know you have to go. Thank you so much. You have to Mint Comedy, you guys to watch. They work with the Star a lot. They work with the best clubs in the world. You can watch all the shows about Mint Comedy, right? You want to tell us a little bit? People want to go sign up, anything?
Yeah, just go to mintcomedy.com. You can sign up. You can watch comedians from, you know, live streamed from the Comedy Cellar and from other comedy clubs in the country. And it's live at the same exact time. You cannot rewind. You cannot stop it. It's as if you are at the comedy club. So, yeah, mintcomedy.com.
And the shows are quite good, isn't it? I mean, he's had famous people on these shows already.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the shows are getting better and better, and the quality of the shows is compatible to Netflix quality. And we're only funnier. Yeah, we're a platform that supports comedy and comedians. We do share the love with comedians. It's a profit sharing platform where the comedians get a piece of the action, and the more streams that we have, the more comedians will make.
And the best thing about it, it's raw. It's not like Netflix special, any special, HBO special, where it's taped. No, it's actually, you get a comedy club experience.
It's live. We have some comedians that go on stage and rap. We have some comedians riffing with the crowd, and they'll bring like somebody on stage. You know, so, you know, special moments that you won't see on a comedy special anywhere.
We even expect you to go to your refrigerator and get two drinks.
That's right. All right, guys. Thank you.
And best of luck to your son in that game.
If there's anything I can do, I mean, Manny is again, is a father figure to me, and Noam is a dear friend. Mm-hmm. And you know, anything that I can do or I can be part of, I would gladly do.
Thank you, man.
That's an interesting idea, though. Maybe you could like make a deal with Uber Eats or something, or, you know, that you get a discount for food brought over during the show. Anyway, I'm just thinking out loud. Thank you.
No, it's great. It's great. Definitely.
Hatem, okay, Mustafa, I'll see you next week. Hatem, will you email me? Will you give me Ahmed's email address so I can email him and thank him?
Yeah, he said not to give it to you, but it's okay. Yeah. No, I will.
I'll send you something, you forward it to him.
Of course. I mean, that's the thing. And I, again, for the listeners, I know that we have like thousands of listeners that know and maybe don't know Manny, but it's not about Manny, just as Manny, or about the comedy style. It's about stepping for what's right, especially in the media these days, the things that they write and all that, you know.
It's actually quite even, I mean, it's kind of what you're doing, but it's quite deep culturally, because what's really happening is that if you are known for
just having open conversations, tolerant of, not talking about tolerant of Nazis, but just tolerant of opinions that might get you mad.
No, yeah. No. Can I ask?
Hold on. My point. If you're tolerant of that in 2021, which is something that used to be considered a badge of honor, this was something that the most intellectual people, the ACLU, this was considered high evolved, you know, character. It is now literally being conflated with some sort of retrograde, immoral personality type. And they'll go back in time and they will find people who were very open to having conversations, and they will redefine these people as having been bad people when they were actually the highest people at the time.
Yeah.
So this is, and it's an ugly rewriting of the past. Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Okay. So, you know, this guy's writing an article and he calls up Marc Maron, and Maron, let's suppose that he gets the quote perfectly right. Maron says, you know, there was some racism at the cellar. Some of the comics had killed all the Arabs, and Manny, he, the owner, he was fanning the flames.
Yeah.
As an ethical journalist, what do you then do? Do you try to clarify what Marc meant by fanning the flames?
No, I don't think there's anything unethical went on here.
So then who gets the blame if they, assuming the quote was correct?
There's no blame. I mean, Maron would get the blame for if the quote comes across, and I'm not saying it came across the same way to everybody that it came to across to me, but if a significant number of people took it the way I took it, then Maron, and I think he would cop this, gets the blame for an inartful way of putting something. And I imagine he would be like, oh, I didn't mean it to sound that way. If I had known, I would have said it differently. So I guess he gets that blame, but it's not like it's an accident.
But I disagree. I think they all get the blame because of the timing. This is not just an article about talking and debate. This is about 9/11. You know, this is insulting to 9/11, insulting the people, insulting the people who worked there, insulting a lot of people to make a place where, and I know a lot of people, maybe I'm getting very personal, but a place where everybody felt safe to go to when we weren't working, even open, and to switch that to a person, no, that is wrong and unethical. You know, you don't know. When you write anything about 9/11, you are writing a piece of history. So don't write wrong history, because that involved a history of a lot of people, including myself and you and other people. Listen, you cannot do that.
This is what I think, and I told this to Mustafa yesterday. If it's gotten to the point now where if you were to say to somebody, the average person on the left, you know, the not the moderate left, but the far left, listen, I want you to make your argument, but you're not allowed to call anybody a racist. Like, that's because anything you're not, but you, no one, you can't call anybody racist. Just tell me what you think.
Yeah,
they really have at a loss to do anything. So what I'm and so how that applies to this. So he's describing after 9/11, when of course, by necessity, there were going to be a lot of heated arguments going on about what happened here. What is the proper response? Did America cause this? Is America a victim? Like, this is 3,000 people who died, and we thought it was going to happen again any moment, right?
But we were also worried about an even worse.
Yeah, that's right. So what? So how is this now? How is this framed? It's framed by the good people who, you know, were worried about the Arabs, and the arguments with who? With the people who said we should kill all the Muslims. There's no talk about the arguments with the conservative people who felt that we needed to find ways to prevent this. Is, you know, from the reasonable people who were not pacifist. It's the good people and the racists. Who was arguing after 9/11 at the table? The good people and the racists. There's no other characters to talk about here. There's the good people who were against the wars. And then there's the racists who are for them and for the killing. That's such a lie.
And 9/11 is not about how we treated the Arab or not. This has nothing to do with. This is a very simple thing, a situation that we had to deal with as all of this. 9/11, when we talk about and write an article, we should say, if I want to write an article that include comedy, it's like I would say how comedy lifted the spirit of New York. If you're not from New York, you don't even understand. We smelled it. We, for months, you know, it was closed from 14th Street and down. So at the cellar and everywhere, we smelled it every day. We walked blocks and blocks to get there. You don't even know. So when you want to talk about 9/11 and stuff like that, you know, there's a lot to talk about, not like how Arabs that were treated. Yeah, that's a side thing, but it's not the one thing that I read about comedy and 9/11 for me. You know,
it's funny. You said it, and you said it very well. And I would just want to bring it out to the audience that there's always a way to look at things where you can bring out the bad. So one, you can take whatever the examples were of anti-Muslim racism or violence after 9/11, and you can make that the story. But you're absolutely right. But actually, the real story is probably that there was almost none.
Yeah.
And you think, well, that's the story of America. Look at this. 3,000 people died from this culture that's quite foreign, you know, and yet America basically went out of its way from the president of the United States down to really make a point. Listen, we're not going to paint everybody with a broad brush. And yes, some horrible people, racist, whatever it is, might have still beat up some Muslims on the street. I don't know that anybody was murdered. So
don't worry, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So some people were murdered. But the if you want to make that the story, it's quite unfair given the reality of the human race and the way, I mean, compared to what? You have to at some point compare it to thousands of years of history.
Yep.
And what would be the norm? What would we normally expect from the human race in a situation like this? And how did America perform above or below that norm? If that's the 50% is like, you know, like America rounded up the Japanese and put them in camps after. And that was probably better than the norm.
Yeah.
After Pearl Harbor compared to other cultures. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I would add to that I think that I don't have the statistics in front of me, and some people are very much against this, but I think that Muslim immigration after 9/11 is higher than it was before 9/11.
I think all immigration are higher than before, but
there was no limitation of Muslim immigration after 9/11.
No, there was not. No,
there was not. But that's the thing is like, you know, another story that also where, you know,
by the way, can I interrupt? Not only that, but think about it. That was 2001. In 2008, we elected Barack Hussein Obama as president. Like it seems so like, accepted now because it happened, but right after 9/11 we elected a president who was, you know, raised in Muslim Indonesia, and people were accusing of being Muslim, and still, you know, America's not so bad.
Only 5 minutes.
America is not
so yeah bad. And also the last thing is you know,
and I think the word Islamophobia, I look, it's a long time ago, but if memory serves, that's a word I don't think I even heard before 9/11.
No.
The whole, you know, the consciousness of Islam.
And honestly, you know, I like as an Arab, like I like the story and Muslim. I like the story not to be as like people that attack Muslim, but I like the story to be how many Muslims volunteer for the FBI and the army and helped. We're getting Osama bin Laden. Every person that got Osama bin Laden was an Arabic and Muslim intelligence. You know, that should be the story. Not all we got hurt and we got, yes, a lot of people were suffered, you know, and that's bad, but that's our duty as citizens. Shit happened, we deal with it.
And I think Dan is quite right. And from a personal like remembrance of it. So my father is accurately portrayed in the article as being a Zionist, and it was pretty hardline Zionist in certain ways, not. But anyway, and I can remember his attitude prior to 9/11, even though he had his friction with the Arab world vis-a-vis their hatred of Israel and what he saw as their desire to see Israel slaughtered. He would speak very often about how we should be letting every Arabic person in this country as citizens, because he recognized how beneficial they were as immigrants to the country. He was very, very keen on much more open-ended immigration to America from the Arab world. It was only after, he didn't really live much longer after 2001, but it was only after 9/11 when the issue of what kind of contagion, for every 100 Muslims that come in, what percentage of these people might be sympathetic with it, and how do you vet that, and the damage that one person can do, that's when people began to rethink these things and it was painful for them, you know, but people with a tough heart said, listen, we can't pretend it's not true. How do we deal with this? But people would call that Islamophobia. But what's not really fair about that is that the people being called Islamophobes were the same people who had zero Islamophobia prior to 9/11. Not only zero, but were quite supportive of the Muslim world being becoming a major contributor to American society. So at some point, people have to be reasonable. Like, we were attacked 9/11, you know? Yeah,
and that's another thing is, like, you know, and probably we'll end with this because I know you have to go, but, you know, we mix the people that anybody that question anything that we should do to protect ourselves or how to deal with vetting people and stuff like that with far left and far right was both put in one pot. If you talk anything about Arab and Islam, it's Islamophobia or like anti. No, some people were very extreme, obviously, but we needed to have conversations about who is here because those misrepresent us as well. I want to know if I'm riding the plane that everybody's safe as well, you know? So.
Well, this goes back to, and then we do have to go, quite a number of Arab people I've spoken to have been to the right of where the average, like, white liberal was on these travel bans that Trump tried to institute. And it was a lot less black, seeing it in black and white as an obvious thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what countries, like, that was Algeria. I don't know what countries were on the list.
And I tell you that some of those countries, and I, you know, they labeled it because it's Trump and all that, but some of those countries, you can get an American citizenship because there's no system. So I can go back to that country if I'm from there and say, this is my son, because I can take any paper. He becomes a citizen. He becomes American. He comes back and he's a terrorist, you know? So these countries should have been in that list. Yeah.
Things are not easy. Issues are complex. And people get them, the smartest people in the world get them wrong sometimes as often as they get them right, once you have the benefit of hindsight. And people need to be more humble. And part of that humility is just listening to the other side, you know, trying to find the way to just chalk it off of, this guy's an asshole. So that's really, I can turn off my ears now. All right, he said something only an asshole would say that. I'm done here. I know I'm right, you know.
That's crazy. Well, you know, just to end up, you know, we will have another special about, you know, that I was talking to Noam before this, is I want to do a special about, you know, 9/11, the comedy stuff, because there's so many stories of the comedians and stuff like that. We probably will go with that. But for now, I just wanted to clear the record about, you know, an article that maybe seemed personal to some people, but I think it's just like, it could happen to everybody. It could happen to you. Some people just say something and it becomes part of your history, and that's just wrong. So we wanted to set the record right.
Yeah, you said Hassan, I'm sorry.
Hatem. Racist. Too sorry. Many Arabic people in one show for you.
It was a lot. It was a bit much, but I pulled through it. But if you're on top, you know, and you'll explain this, Noam, to your kids, Manny was an important man. You're an important man. People are going to take shots at you. That's the nature of the beast. You can't escape it.
No, but it's not about that, Dan. Like, one day, Manny Dorman is not here to defend himself. Soon, I won't be here. Soon, Noam won't be here. A lot of people, the only thing he's going to have is the history. So it needs to be set right. So when they Google this, they can see this show as well and know the truth.
Yes, yes.
Right, but you also got to know that if you're on top, there are people, you know, you know, there goes someone's going to say something.
I'm just trying to make you wrong that Noam is not on top. Okay, fine.
Uneasy is the head that wears the crown. I guess that's not quite the same thing. Anyway, yeah, it's lonely at the top.
Yeah. So
it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken.
Yeah. That it does.
Just to end this up, I want everybody to remember that as it started, you know, the people that woke up today, went to work, or firefighters or police, or, you know, all those people that just went to work and then, you know, they didn't make it back. And we said never forget, you know, but I wonder if a lot of people did forget. You know, it's not just a hashtag. What did you do, you know, to keep that conversation and history going on? Writing an article like that is not part of the history. That's some bullshit. But, you know, and the other thing is, I've been fighting for 20 years and more, and I will still do that. Muslims and Islam try to do our best to serve this country and represent that religion, because those people are not Muslims, you know. And all the terrorists that were captured was with the help of Muslim people. So just also keep that in mind. And if you guys want to say anything.
No, that's it. That's a nice way to end.
Okay. Well, all right. Thank you guys so much for being here.
All right. Thank you. And it was great that you got Ahmed. Send me his, I just sent you an email. Read the email and send me his email address.
All right. Sounds good. Danny, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. No, I see you tomorrow.